For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is Hit and Run on 670 The Score. It is time to open up the phone lines once again and talk to you, the baseball fans, with me, Matt Spiegel, here on The Score. And we will include the White Sox, who were shut out on Friday for the ninth time. They were once shut out eight times in a season in which they lost 106 games. They've now been shut out nine times in a season in which they have now lost 26 games. Because yesterday they got a win. 7-26 for the White Sox. On the road, they're now 2-14. They began the season 1-14 on the road, which tied a modern-era record for the worst road start shared by nine teams, most recently in 2005. What's amazing is that the Astros in 2005 started out 1-14 on the road and then made their way all the way to the World Series, where they lost to the White Sox. It's hard to imagine that happening. But fun win for the White Sox yesterday. If you are invested and paying attention and involved, I hope you enjoyed it. If you hung out through a three-hour rain delay and then checked back in to see two more strikes delivered by Tanner Banks after John Brebbia had gotten the first strike on the final hitter, then props to you. 180 minutes. And then a couple more strikes thrown by Tanner Banks, including one which was an awful call by C.B. Buckner. I mean, he had a terrible game, in part because he's a terrible umpire. I think it's maybe in large part because he's a terrible umpire. C.B. Buckner, earlier in the game, didn't make a call. Did you see that on the strikeout, on the third strike? C.B. Buckner just didn't make a call. I think it was Nicky Lopez who was up at the time, and there was just nothing had happened, and Nicky Lopez is standing there, and then he's like, wait a minute, I'm out? Huh? Why is that? And Pedro Grifol came out and is like, you should make a call one way or the other. And C.B. Buckner held up the fist like, oh, yeah, no, it was a strike. Well, that would have been good to do earlier in the moment. But, you know, weirdness, lots and lots of weirdness.
He has done this before, right?
C.B. Buckner?
Yeah,
I think he has.
Yeah, just a few times.
Yeah, a few times. What I thought was unbelievably entertaining was Brebbia trying to get through the bases loaded jam before the rain delay. And it was pouring, just a hellacious downpour. And Brebbia is like wiping his hand on his leg, there between his legs in the protected area. I heard it described just underneath the groin. That's like the only dry spot he could find. Not for long. But he's down there. He's wiping his hand, trying to keep the ball dry. And he's trying to pitch, and he's arguing with C.B. Buckner. And apparently he's arguing because he wanted to keep going, wanted to get the game over with. But anyway, here's what it sounded like during the broadcast.
As Brebbia now looking for back-to-back strikeouts with the bases loaded, and the skies are opening up here in St. Louis. Chief Dan Iasonia at second says, play on. A 1-2 from Brebbia. Strike three! And the White Sox are one out away.
Man, that's John Schriffen talking about, understandably, the crew chief Dan Iasonia and Brebbia keep looking at him. Here's Brebbia post-game about what he was trying to get done as he's arguing with umpires in the midst of the pouring rain.
What was it just like pitching in those type of conditions there and coming through?
You're talking about the rain or putting all those guys on base?
Both. The rain with those guys on.
The rain was a lot of fun. Putting the guys on, not so much. I love the elements. You don't often get to play when it's pouring rain because they like stop the game. So I try and take every advantage of that as possible. It's just an absolute disaster when it's coming down like that. So you never know what's going to happen. It's kind of fun.
Do you remember when Mike Trout was up for the Angels against Vince Velasquez of the White Sox a few years ago? I think it was 2 years ago. And it was pouring rain and they're having a great battle at the plate and neither of them wanted to stop. And the umpires are like, look, it's pouring and we should bring out the tarp. And both Trout and Velasquez wanted to stay. And it was like such a great little kid moment. Good for Brebbia, who wanted to keep pitching. I like that dude. Let's talk to that dude. He's fun. He's entertaining. That's a win for the White Sox. Good for them. Good for you, the White Sox fans. Again, if you are invested in the day-to-day and trying to have your companion sport. I talked a lot about the broadcast during the course of the week. And we, you know, because what had happened, if anybody doesn't know, is like there have been a bunch of little things that had bothered me from the play-by-play perspective about just certain different baseball sensibilities, situational stuff, baseball history, but also rules and different things like that. I don't need to go all over that. What I will tell you is that this moment during the week is what broke me as a baseball fan.
Setting off Bill Veeck's new exploding scoreboard for the very first time.
So, yeah, it's Bill Veeck, and that kind of broke me because I think Bill Veeck is an absolute god of baseball history, let alone in this city, on both sides of town. So I kind of went off a little bit, and I'm not trying to revisit that. What I am trying to do is pay proper respect to Bill Veeck. So I'm holding in my hot little hands my personal copy of Veeck as in wreck, and I'm going to give you an anecdote from this, which I have always loved, and I wanted to bring the book in to make sure that I got it right because it's so cool. So I'm going to bring you that in a moment. But before I do that, me and Sean Sears texting, talking yesterday about the great Bill Veeck. I said, go back and find what you can from Bill Veeck talking, perhaps on Chicago radio, about baseball. Because I'd also texted with Chuck Swirsky, who is my radio grandfather, as Dan McNeil interned for him, and I interned for Dan McNeil. So Chuck and I have a forever bond.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Absolutely. And Chuck Swirsky, as a young talk show host in this town, had many a conversation with Bill Veeck. And we looked for that. We couldn't find that. What we did find, though, is Bill Veeck on WFMT in 1981 with the great Studs Terkel. And here is Bill Veeck explaining the exploding scoreboard. This is for anybody who might need to hear it.
Bill, you have been criticized by some of your colleagues, the owners of other teams, for your innovations. One was the exploding scoreboard. When someone on the Sox or the home team hits a home run, the scoreboard explodes. But that's not accidental. You got the idea from something you read.
It's like most ideas. You steal them, and then you adapt them. And that was from Sir Ryan's Time of Your Life play, in which you know so well. It takes place in a bar, and I feel very comfortable in bars. I spent a great part of my life in them, fortunately. Those people who haven't spent any time in bars are great losers. And in this saloon, there's a fellow that is playing a pinball game at the very back of it.
Yeah.
And he walks up, if you remember, to get nickels from the bartender and back again. Never says a word. Nothing happens. And then just before the final curtain, he hits a winner. And everything happens. The band plays Dixie and flags come up and lights go on popping. It was wonderful. So I thought, gee, that's great. All of this build up and then all of a sudden, excitement. And that's what the scoreboard it was meant to do. And it's funny, they wanted to declare the scoreboard illegal. They said it gave an advantage to the home team. And probably it did, because it did embarrass some pitchers. It was meant to. And they said, you know, that's a terrible advice. Now there are 13 or 14 of them.
So that's Bill Veeck talking about the exploding scoreboard. It embarrassed some pitchers, and it's supposed to. Those of you who have not spent a lot of time in bars are great losers.
That dude's the best.
Dude, that audio quality is so good. It's a long interview. We're going to listen to it, and we might do a little snippet weekly.
We'll pull some more from it.
Sure. I mean, we might have to. I mean, as a texter says, Bill Veeck is the patron saint of Chicago baseball. This is true. I'm reading from Veeck as in Rec, Chapter 2. My daddy, William Veeck Sr., became president of the Chicago Cubs in 1917 when I was 3 years old. There is a story that he was hired by William Wrigley after he had written a series of articles in the Chicago American blasting the way the Cubs were being run. The story is not really inaccurate. It is simply overstated. He did not blast the Cubs. He wrote a sane and thoughtful series telling in a sane and thoughtful way what changes he would make if he were running the Chicago Cubs. And folks, as I put my voice back in, William Wrigley read the series by William Veeck Sr., Bill Veeck's dad, and said, why don't you come run the Cubs? And he did. So then his son, Bill Veeck Jr., the man whose voice you just heard, who would later own the White Sox twice, ended up working for the Cubs, doing absolutely everything. He did everything. And here's a snippet from later. And let me say this. Has anybody ever heard the name Grover Cleveland Alexander? One of the most famous pitchers in the history of baseball from way, way back in the day. Right up there with Christy Mathewson as like the greatest pitchers in early baseball, along with Cy Young and Walter Johnson. Okay. But he was a Cub. And I want you to hear this story. Keep in mind, by the way, do any of you remember the amusement park Riverview that was once at Belmont and Western, Roscoe and Western? Some of our older listeners might, but it was Riverview, and it was right there, and it was there a long time. Here's how long. Here's from Bill Veeck's book. With a father who ran a ball club, my boyhood was the kind most kids dream about. For hanging around the ballpark, I got to know all the players. During my early years, our great star was Grover Cleveland Alexander. Alex was always extraordinarily kind to me. In one of the golden moments of my boyhood, Alex took me to Riverview, an amusement park in Chicago, and was challenged at the baseball throwing concession. In those days, you didn't just throw baseballs at a pyramid of pins. They'd have a cage with a guy sitting on a collapsible platform. The customer would throw the baseball at a round metal disc, and if he hit the disc, the platform would spin up and dump the guy into a tank of water. To make it even more delightful, if you dumped him, you didn't have to pay. The guy on the platform was also the shill. It was his job to insult the people as they walked by and keep them so riled up that they'd keep throwing just for the pleasure of dunking him in the water. As Grover Cleveland Alexander and I were strolling past, the guy on the platform yelled, "Hey, you bum, you don't look as if you could hit the side of a barn. You don't frighten me, you bum. Come on, step up and let me see what you can do." Well, here I am with the man who could control a baseball better than anybody else in the world, even if he did look like a bum. "Come on, Alex," I said. "Let's show him something." Grover Cleveland Alexander could have hit that disc all night. He almost drowned three different guys. They'd slide off the platform, hit the tank, climb out, and before they were halfway back onto the platform, splash, back into the water again. Dude is walking with Grover Cleveland Alexander at an amusement park, and the guy in the dunk tank challenges the greatest pitcher alive to throw baseballs at a metal disc. I mean, I just love that story.
There you go, you bum.
Reuben Ford Spiegel once dunked somebody in a dunk tank with a pitch. Didn't you, Rue? I forget who you dunked, but you nailed that. Do you remember who it was? I don't remember who it was. I remember that John Vincent, the anthem singer, was egging you on. Was that who you dunked?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember if it was him in the tank or not, but you nailed that, just like Grover Cleveland Alexander. Anyway, read Veeck as in Rec if you want to learn about the Cubs and the White Sox and incredible baseball stories for miles and miles and miles. And go watch the Saint of Second Chances on Netflix about Mike Veeck, who I really, really want to own the White Sox again someday. Phone lines are open. You want to talk about anything regarding the White Sox, we can do it this hour. And anything regarding the Cubs, we can also do this hour. But interested in how the White Sox fans feel. If you want to talk about your broadcast, you can. You want to talk about Bill Veeck, you can. If you want to talk about 9 shutouts already, you can do that. Phone line's open. Jack is in Wilmette on 670 The Score. Jack, good morning and welcome in. How are you?
Please, how you doing?
I'm great.
I got a, you know, Craig Counsell.
Yes, sir.
He's with the Brewers. He's got 4 guys that go 7 innings. 1 guy that gets a hater. He became a genius. He comes here. He lets Hendricks give up 7 runs 4 times in a row. That means he blew at least 4 games for the Cubs. Then he has a closer who, after 3 times blowing it, he brings him in 2 more times, and then in the 8th inning the other day, he's responsible for 6 or 7 losses. And he was so smart with the Brewers because he had that kind of a pitching staff. Now he's just a regular manager, and nobody in town is saying anything negative about him. This is almost like Justin Fields. It's everybody else's fault, not his. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Jack. Interesting. Look, all managers deserve criticism and critique. They do. It's the very nature of the game, and there are things that can often go wrong. I've been critical. I think he needs to push the starters more. I wanted to see Jameson Taillon start the 7th yesterday. I know he's at 99 pitches. I wanted to see him start it. I wanted to see Javier Assad start the 6th the other day at Shea. And for the record, I felt these things and said these things wherever I was at the moment that it happened, because I'd already brought it up as a thing. He said, especially after Kyle Hendricks got hurt, that he wanted to push the starters more. Well, go ahead and do so. And I know it's hard when they're young. He did push Wesneski the other day. That's in part because he had no one. That blown save by Alzolay in the 8th, I mean, there was very, very few people available at that point. And I put that one on Adbert more than I put it on Craig. So, but some of the others, Keegan Thompson's blow up yesterday. It was Adbert again after Assad, wasn't it? Did Adbert give up the home run after Assad pitched at Shea? Trying to remember, in that 6th inning, after Assad pitched 5 innings at Shea and then left, I think it was Adbert. But anyway,
it was Adbert that followed him.
Yeah. So it's been Adbert a few times, and they need to arm him with more. No roster moves as of now that I've heard about, but they need to arm him with more. And yes, he needs to churn through some of the roles and push the starters further. I am absolutely willing to look at Craig, and we talk to him every couple of weeks on Parker and the Spiegel, and I'll bring the stuff up to him specifically. And he can take it. He's a grown-ass man. He'll probably have great answers. We'll do that, I think, Wednesday this week. But yeah, it's tricky, man. It is tricky, and it is a philosophy around MLB that needs to be pushed back on. And managers are the only ones who can really, really do it in the middle of a game, because they're the ones that are in charge. Callers, we're going to get to you. We have some Cubs news and a Cubs lineup as well. We'll get that to you in our next segment as we continue to take your calls. We'll also do Team of the Moment right here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
I think what's clear for me in this stretch is that we're going to have to push our starting pitching a little farther in games. We've had some off days here. We've had some relievers with, you know, that I think we're in pretty good shape with the bullpen, but we've still, for the first 22 games, we've got some guys with 10 appearances, and that's a little on the high end for me. And so we're going to have to just, that means starters have to cover more innings. And I think we're equipped to do that and in a good spot to do that, but it's definitely going to be part of the next 2 weeks.
So that was Craig Counsell after Kyle Hendricks got hurt. And I use hurt with quotation marks, of course. But Kyle Hendricks has made one start at AA. Apparently he's going to make another. So he is not back just yet. All signs point to Justin Steele being ready to go on Monday against the San Diego Padres. Hell, that's tomorrow. That is good news. Kyle Hendricks is throwing a bullpen right here in Chicago today. So that's interesting that he's throwing a bullpen here and then could go back down to AA, back down to West Tennessee. Interesting that he came back up. So maybe they want to let Tommy Hotovy and others with the big league club take a peek at Kyle right here on a side day. Also got this update. Cody Bellinger and Seiya Suzuki will run the bases and hit today. They will both run the bases and both hit today. Well, that is good news.
That's what we like.
I wonder what that means for impending roster moves whenever those guys are up. When Bellinger comes back, I don't know if I send PCA down. I don't think I do. The way he's been swinging the bat, you know what I really like about the way that PCA is swinging the bat? Yes, there's been strikeouts, and yesterday there was a bad one in the first when both he and Wisdom had a chance to really break that game wide open, and they both K'd, but at the series at Shea, there was contact when there needed to be for a ground out RBI that ended up being all they needed in the Shota game, and there was a sac fly RBI as well. I may be mixing up the game, but there were two times where contact was needed and he made it. Liked seeing that out of PCA, just as we liked seeing it out of Wisdom yesterday. So it'll be very interesting. God. I wish they trusted Patrick Wisdom more defensively at third base.
He was there a couple of years ago and really good, but it just hasn't quite gotten there since 22, right?
Yeah, because then you'd wonder if Nick Madrigal was the roster move to be made at that point.
I'm wondering what his role is, right, besides third base replacement.
He was there as a defensive replacement yesterday in a two-run game. He replaced Morel after Morel's at bat in the eighth inning. 670, the score is where you are. We'll do team of the moment in a minute, but the phone lines have lit back up, and I honor that. This is Kurt in Rockford on 670, the score. Hello, Kurt.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Great.
Hey, yesterday must have been officially SSS Day in baseball.
Okay.
SSS Day stands for Same Score Saturday.
Okay.
Cubs finished 6-5, and the Sox finished 6-5.
Okay,
both of them on the victory end. So hey, let's have as many SSS days as we can.
Well, that's good stuff, Kurt. Thank you. Let me look and see how many 6-5 games we had around MLB. Got those two yesterday, and then no others. So really, what it is a small sample same score Saturday. So I would argue that it's really an SSSSS, Kurt. That's what I would argue. Stan is in Bellwood on the score. Good morning, Stan.
Hey, good morning to you, Speaks. How's everything? You're sounding good today.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, no, I feel good. The associate producer is here. I got to read from Vec as in Rec on the score's airwaves. Come on. Let's go.
I hear you. That's what I'm saying. Hey, Speaks, just to prove to John Schriffen that I'm not a hater. I would like to say one thing about the White Sox this year that I think Chris Getz has gotten right. I really believe that the bullpen has a chance to be really, really good. They've had moments this year where they've, crapped the bed and, gotten bombed out. But on balance, I think their arrow is pointed up, and most of those guys have a future, and it's one thing that the White Sox can build on. So
the problem is, Stan, as you know, is that bullpens are remarkably volatile from season to season. So bullpen as a calling card in terms of a build is tough to do overall, from year to year. But I will agree that a bunch of arms look real good and real useful in that bullpen, including Jordan Leisure, who they grabbed from the Dodgers. I think Leisure's stuff and his moxie has been pretty good. And so there's some bright spots there for sure, but it's hard to think of it as a building block. Maybe it's a good sign of development. We'll take that.
I'm going to push back. I think you can build. I know this. You're not going to win without a good one. So, you know, and right now, that's the best group that this current team has. They're young. I don't see why, you know, this can't be a building block. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll find out. But I do know I like what I see, and I want to see more. But Speaks, on the national level, before I go,
yeah.
I got a question for you. And it's just, I don't know why it bugs me, because I really don't care about the Miami Marlins. But this trade of Luis Arraez the other day,
yeah,
is the looks like it's the forerunner for another fire sale upcoming by the Marlins, which would be the fourth or fifth that they've had in my memory, you know, over the last couple of decades. What exactly is the business that they're in? What is the point of their existence? It was just 2 years ago, they were in it down to the wire,
yeah,
you know, for the playoffs. And now all of a sudden, they're blowing it up again. What are they doing down there, and why can't they get it right?
Yeah, it's look, Stan, that's all on point. Rather than give you chapter and verse on the specificity of the Miami Marlins predicament, because A, I can't speak on it with full authority, and B, we're in Chicago, I will take the opportunity to point out what has long been a problem with the competitive balance in this sport and in this league. And every time there is a work stoppage, there is part of me that wants it to be so vicious and so severe that they get to a salary cap and a salary floor. Because without a salary floor, you are perpetually looking at certain franchises who don't do it as well as the Tampa Bay Rays, and they end up trying, failing, selling. Trying, failing, selling. Or you look at franchises who exist, you know, 60 to 70 to 80 mil below an average payroll, like the Detroit Tigers, and seem to have an interesting young core, but it's hard to imagine them ever getting over the top. Now, I know there are exceptions, and the Diamondbacks went to the World Series last year, and they've gone ahead and added some off to a slow start, but maybe they'll get back. And the aforementioned Tampa Rays are a brilliant, efficient franchise. But there are so many franchises around baseball that, for reasons ranging from bad ownership to bad development to unwillingness, just have absolutely no shot and create an outsized and kind of gross imbalance. And it's not going to change unless there's a salary cap and a salary floor. So sometimes when there's an ugly work stoppage, as there probably will be again in a couple of years, I find myself hoping it's violent enough that it changes the whole damn thing. This is Phil in Chicago on The Score. Hey, Phil, how are you?
How are you doing? Thank you. I'm in McHenry, by the way.
Ah, McHenry. Phil in McHenry. I know you, Phil. Thanks for calling. What's happening?
Hey, no problem. Hey, love you, Speed. Hey, listen, I love the show, by the way, and I'm a big Cub fan, and I'm going to tell you something. There's a lot of things you've been thinking about, and there's a lot of things I'd love to talk to you about, but you got enough time to talk about it. But you know, my biggest problem is, and I agree with that call that you had a couple, I think one or three callers away.
Yep.
He called that Craig Council. I have a lot of respect for that man, but I've seen him literally lose probably half a dozen games under his control. While we've been in this, while the Cubs have lost, you know, Bellinger and Suzuki and Steele's been out. Now, one thing I will say is that things are going to get better. I think things are going to get much better once we get Steele back. And I heard Bellinger and Suzuki will be playing, I think, this next week, actually.
Yes, Bellinger and Suzuki are both going to run the bases and hit at Wrigley Field today. That's a great bit of news. Thank you for the call, Phil. Let me be clear on Craig Council. My main gripe has developed, and it is him not pushing the starters longer, okay? And fair game on that. Some of the bullpen choices, I think, have been odd. Sometimes it's been guys who have to be good really sucking. And sometimes it's been limited options based on what he's been provided. and what has happened in terms of the rest and such like that. So not everything is on him, but some is on him, and this is baseball. I will say, I think he's responsible for a bunch of wins as well. Like, I really do. I pointed out one specifically early on where he used Ben Brown with an opener. Remember, he used Luke Little as the opener, and then Brown came in for his first extended run. And we'll talk to Ben Brown about this in about an hour. His first appearance, Ben Brown, was in Texas, and it was in relief, and he was okay, and then he had a really bad inning. But then his next appearance was as an opener on the road, and it was perfectly executed and led to a win. And I was like, you know what? That's a manager win. Put it there. I think there have been others that we can point to in terms of utilizing guys in the right spot and people, you know, performing very, very well. So it's a mixed bag of wins and losses, and even those are hard to document. But anyway, it's good and healthy conversation, but understand the moderation, in my opinion, on Craig Counsell. One more quickie. This is Gator Dale on the score. Hello, Gator. You're on with me, Matt Spiegel. What's up?
Hey, Matt, just think, if Altuve didn't blow six saves, the Cubs would be the best record in the entire MLB right now.
Yeah. Well, and in that regard, if they had gone out and gotten a legit closer and Adbert had been in a different role, you know, you drop Adbert down, you drop Neris down, then there's that too. So you can point that at Jed. But yeah, Adbert has been rough. And I like Adbert very much, but he has been rough. Remember we had him on, Sean, a couple of weeks ago, and I said, what's going on? Why is the swing and miss not there? And he said, honestly, it's just been a little cold. And I don't think that's enough of the reason. I think it's spots. Because even when he just gave up the three little singles and not the bombs the other day, he missed spots left and right, man.
No one's chasing that slider either.
No.
He's continuously getting ahead of batters and not getting that out. It's what Keegan Thompson ran into last year.
Yeah. If they're not chasing that, then they'll sit fastball.
Fastball's really, really straight.
Yeah,
so.
And Adbert's can be that way as well. My biggest problem with Adbert the other day is letting three guys steal a base. Letting three dudes steal bases. And that's when you're bringing it out to the other aspects of your game. We will come back and give you our team of the moment around MLB. And they are close. And they are good. At least for now. We'll do that next. Ben Brown in an hour. James Fegan before we're out of here. Two more hours of Hit and Run on the Score.
Last time the Twins won 12 straight games, he wasn't alive. Right side, Santana. Has it, and it's over. The Minnesota Twins, for the first time since 1991, have won 12 consecutive baseball games.
12.
It was the team of the moment.
That's why the Twins are.
Offering entertainment.
The Twins are
the team of the moment. They caught our eyes.
The Minnesota Twins are the team of the moment. They were 7-13 on the 21st of April. And now they have won 12 in a row. And here's why. Oh, no, we got to lose the karaoke track because it just says Heat now. Sean, I got to sing Team of the Moment again over that back part, just in case you do that. What the hell, man?
Hey, man, I only put the audio in from Respetera. I don't listen to it always. I trust you. Not anymore, Russ.
Man. Dude, you're throwing that guy under the bus?
No. It's
He's
me.
The best there
it's
is.
It's my fault, yeah, Russ. Yeah. If you hear this, don't ever.
Clearly, I'm pointing a thumb. It's my fault for not singing Team of the Moment over the Heat of the Moment on that part of the karaoke track from Asia.
Has anyone ever told you got a great voice, man?
No. They have not. But anyway, Team of the Moment is Minnesota Twins. Anyway, they were the worst in baseball at hitting off-speed pitches. They were hitting 195 as a team at 7-13 overall, and they were terrible at hitting off-speed and breaking pitches. And since then, they are seeing even more, because everybody knew that the word was out that they couldn't hit off speed pitches, except the White Sox, who threw them 60% plus fastballs. And they have been great. They are now absolutely dominating against off-speed pitches. They're seeing even more, and they're dominating, and they've scored five or more runs in all but two games of this streak. Rocco Baldelli says they've just been putting the ball in play, trying to put a good swing on it, that is a productive thing to do instead of trying to blast against stuff like that. And that's not what's happening anymore. So, and the pitching, the bullpen has been incredible. They got a bunch of dudes in the bullpen who can save games. In fact, in this streak, they have gotten saves from Caleb Thielbar, from Griffin Jacks. They've gotten saves from Cole Sands and from a guy with some of the nastiest stuff in all of baseball, Joan Duran. And he's been great. This is what it sounds like when Joan Duran enters a game at Target Field.
Atención, chimoso. El que quiera perder su tiempo, que me aconseje. Que estoy en romo, pero feo.
All the lights go out.
Y hoy hay que darme banda.
Help me describe the visuals, Sean. It gets crazy. All the lights go out.
They're flashing the lights. Flames are across the board. Highlights of him playing. And everyone in the stands has their phones out flashing them.
So cool. One of the best closer entrances in baseball is Minnesota. And this is the other reason that things are going well, is that their vibes are elite. And yes, I'm the good vibes guy. And I like good vibes. It's my favorite T-shirt. I'm not wearing it right now. Right now I'm wearing Ruben's favorite T-shirt, as a matter of fact. But anyway, I'll ask you about that in a second, Ruben. But the vibes are so good, in part because of the summer sausage. Is everybody hip to the summer sausage? They ended up with a summer sausage that they now are throwing around as a celebration sausage after home runs, but also after big offensive moments of any kind and after the game. And Rocco Baldelli expressed some fear about what was going to happen to the person who was with the sausage when the package opened, that it was going to be bad and he was going to catch a disease. But then Dan Hayes, our friend over at The Athletic who covers the Twins, did some of the finest bit of sausage journalism that I've ever seen this week, where he talked to a lot of sausage experts and got confirmation that the sausage is already cooked and will still be edible if at any time it opens up. So I'm not sure if they've gotten other sausages involved now, if they've added to the depth chart of their sausages. They should. That would be advisable, frankly, just to have it, you know, as a backup. But the sausage and the Twins has just all been a mix of incredibly good vibes. And they've now won 12 games in a row. And all of a sudden, that division has four teams over 500. And the Twins, who were my pick to win the division, are sitting there in second behind the Cleveland Guardians, who have been a team of the moment previously, people, and ahead of the Kansas City Royals, who could be a team of the moment in the future. Ruben, I think this is still your favorite T-shirt of mine. Is that true? You can describe the T-shirt for the peoples, if you will. Is this still your favorite?
Which one is it? Yes.
Tell people what it says.
Well, basically, everyone, it says... That's a horrible idea. What time?
Exactly. And the youngster likes it because it's dad saying that's a horrible idea. I'm not going to do that. All right, but what time? Let's get together. Let's hang out. Let's do that. And I don't try to live by that ethos. There was a time, I think, when I did. But the kid likes the shirt. Anyway, keep screening calls. He's got homework to do. Sean, he has homework to do at some point. You can send him away with the Chromebook to do some homework.
Sure. He's been doing a little bit of both. He's multitasking over here.
Oh, really?
Kids special over here, man.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just kids today. They can handle a lot of different screens.
It's terrifying.
It's freaking horrifying.
I'm 31 and I'm scared of it, man.
Hey, man, I believe the children are our future, okay? So, anyway.
Did you want to sing that? Or?
No, I'm good. I liked it better when Sexual Chocolate sang it. With Eddie Murphy. That's my favorite version of The Greatest Love of All. You are listening to Hit and Run on 670 The Score. We have bonus Hit and Run today up until 12:45. Here's what's coming up on the show. James Fegan in the noon hour talking White Sox. He's my favorite guy to talk White Sox with. And no offense to Ryan McGuffey or to Steve Stone. I apologize to all of them. But Fegan grew up a White Sox fan. Maybe McGuffey did too. I don't know. Now I feel bad. Whatever. I love you, Guff. You know that. But anyway, James Fegan coming up in 1 hour. Before that, Ben Brown, when he is done with his bullpen session at Wrigley, he is going to join us on The Score. Very much looking forward to that. Coming up next, we always like to look at the leaderboards, pretending we are your old school Sunday morning newspaper, and two very specific items we will look at next on 670 The Score.
It's a substantial packaged, you know, sausage.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is Hit and Run on 670 The Score. It is time to open up the phone lines once again and talk to you, the baseball fans, with me, Matt Spiegel, here on The Score. And we will include the White Sox, who were shut out on Friday for the ninth time. They were once shut out eight times in a season in which they lost 106 games. They've now been shut out nine times in a season in which they have now lost 26 games, because yesterday they got a win. 7-26 for the White Sox. On the road, they're now 2-14. They began the season 1-14 on the road, which tied a modern era record for the worst road start shared by nine teams, most recently in 2005. What's amazing is that the Astros in 2005 started out 1-14 on the road and then made their way all the way to the World Series, where they lost to the White Sox. It's hard to imagine that happening. But fun win for the White Sox yesterday. If you are invested and paying attention and involved, I hope you enjoyed it. If you hung out through a three-hour rain delay and then checked back in to see two more strikes delivered by Tanner Banks after John Brebbia had gotten the first strike on the final hitter, then props to you. 180 minutes. And then a couple more strikes thrown by Tanner Banks, including one which was an awful call by C.B. Buckner. I mean, he had a terrible game, in part because he's a terrible umpire. I think it's maybe in large part because he's a terrible umpire. C.B. Buckner, earlier in the game, didn't make a call. Did you see that on the strikeout, on the third strike? C.B. Buckner just didn't make a call. I think it was Nicky Lopez who was up at the time, and there was just nothing had happened, and Nicky Lopez is standing there, and then he's like, wait a minute, I'm out? Huh? Why is that? And Pedro Grifol came out and is like, you should make a call one way or the other, and C.B. Buckner held up the fist like, oh yeah, no, it was a strike. Well, that would have been good to do earlier in the moment, but, you know, weirdness. Lots and lots of weirdness.
He has done this before, right?
C.B. Buckner?
Yeah,
I think he has.
Yeah, just a few times.
Yeah, a few times. What I thought was unbelievably entertaining was Brebbia trying to get through the bases-loaded jam before the rain delay And it was pouring, just a hellacious downpour. And Brebbia is like wiping his hand on his leg, there between his legs in the protected area. I heard it described just underneath the groin. That's like the only dry spot he could find. Not for long. But he's down there. He's wiping his hand, trying to keep the ball dry. And he's trying to pitch, and he's arguing with C.B. Buckner. And apparently he's arguing because he wanted to keep going, wanted to get the game over with. But anyway, here's what it sounded like during the broadcast.
As Brebbia now looking for back-to-back strikeouts with the bases loaded, and the skies are opening up here in St. Louis. Chief Dan Iasonia at second says, play on. 1-2 from Brebbia. Strike three! And the White Sox are one out away.
Man, that's John Schifrin talking about, understandably, the crew chief Dan Iasonia and Brebbia keep looking at him. Here's Brebbia post-game about what he was trying to get done as he's arguing with umpires in the midst of the pouring rain.
What was it just like pitching in those type of conditions there and coming down?
You talking about the rain or putting all those guys on base?
Both. The rain with those guys on.
The rain was a lot of fun. Putting the guys on, not so much. I love the elements. You don't often get to play when it's pouring rain because they like stop the game. So I try and take every advantage of that as possible. It's just an absolute disaster when it's coming down like that. So you never know what's going to happen. It's kind of fun.
Do you remember when Mike Trout was up for the Angels against Vince Velasquez of the White Sox a few years ago? I think it was 2 years ago. And it was pouring rain, and they're having a great battle at the plate, and neither of them wanted to stop. And the umpires are like, look, it's pouring, and we should bring out the tarp. And both Trout and Velasquez wanted to stay, and it was like such a great little kid moment. Good for Brebbia, who wanted to keep pitching. I like that dude. Let's talk to that dude. He's fun. He's entertaining. That's a win for the White Sox. Good for them. Good for you, the White Sox fans. Again, if you are invested in the day-to-day and trying to have your companion sport. I talked a lot about the broadcast during the course of the week. And we, you know, because what had happened, if anybody doesn't know, is like, there have been a bunch of little things that had bothered me from the play-by-play perspective about just certain different baseball sensibilities, situational stuff, baseball history, but also rules and different things like that. I don't need to go all over that. What I will tell you is that this moment during the week is what broke me as a baseball fan.
Setting off Bill Veeck's new exploding scoreboard for the very first time.
So, yeah, it's Bill Veeck, and that kind of broke me because I think Bill Veeck is an absolute god of baseball history, let alone in this city, on both sides of town. So I kind of went off a little bit, and I'm not trying to revisit that. What I am trying to do is pay proper respect to Bill Veeck. So I'm holding in my hot little hands my personal copy of Veeck as in wreck, and I'm going to give you an anecdote from this, which I have always loved, and I wanted to bring the book in to make sure that I got it right because it's so cool. So I'm going to bring you that in a moment. But before I do that, me and Sean Sears texting, talking yesterday about the great Bill Veeck. I said, go back and find what you can from Bill Veeck talking, perhaps on Chicago radio, about baseball. Because I'd also texted with Chuck Swirsky, who is my radio grandfather, as Dan McNeil interned for him, and I interned for Dan McNeil. So Chuck and I have a forever bond.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Absolutely. And Chuck Swirsky, as a young talk show host in this town, had many a conversation with Bill Veeck. And we looked for that. We couldn't find that. What we did find, though, is Bill Veeck on WFMT in 1981 with the great Studs Terkel. And here is Bill Veeck explaining the exploding scoreboard. This is for anybody who might need to hear it.
You have been criticized by some of your colleagues, the owners of other teams, for your innovations. One was the exploding scoreboard. When someone on the Sox or the home team hits a home run, the scoreboard explodes. But that's not accidental. You got the idea from something you read.
Yes, it's like most ideas. You steal them, and then you adapt them. And that was from Saroyan's Time of Your Life play, in which you know so well. It takes place in a bar, and I feel very comfortable in bars. I spent a great part of my life in them. unfortunately. Those people who haven't spent any time in bars are great losers. And in this saloon, there's a fellow that is playing a pinball game at the very back of it.
Yeah.
And he walks up, if you remember, to get nickels from the bartender. And back again. Never says a word. Nothing happens. And then just before the final curtain, he hits a winner. And everything happens. The band plays Dixie and flags come up and lights go on popping. It was wonderful. So I thought, gee, that's great. All of this build up, and then all of a sudden, excitement. And that's what the scoreboard was meant to do. And it's funny, they wanted to declare the scoreboard illegal. They said it gave an advantage to the home team. And probably it did, because it did embarrass some pitchers. It was meant to. And they said, you know, that's a terrible advantage. Now there are 13 or 14 of them.
So that's Bill Veeck talking about the exploding scoreboard. It embarrassed some pitchers, and it's supposed to. Those of you who have not spent a lot of time in bars are great losers.
That dude's the best.
Dude, that audio quality is so good. It's a long interview. We're going to listen to it, and we might do a little snippet weekly.
We'll pull some more from it.
Sure. I mean, we might have to. I mean, as a texter says, Bill Veeck is the patron saint of Chicago baseball. This is true. I'm reading from Veeck is in Rec, Chapter 2. My daddy, William Veeck Sr., became president of the Chicago Cubs in 1917 when I was 3 years old. There is a story that he was hired by William Wrigley after he had written a series of articles in the Chicago American blasting the way the Cubs were being run. The story is not really inaccurate, it is simply overstated. He did not blast the Cubs, he wrote a sane and thoughtful series telling in a sane and thoughtful way what changes he would make if he were running the Chicago Cubs. And folks, as I put my voice back in, William Wrigley read the series by William Veeck Sr., Bill Veeck's dad, and said, why don't you come run the Cubs? And he did. So then his son, Bill Veeck Jr., the man whose voice you just heard, who would later own the White Sox twice, ended up working for the Cubs, doing absolutely everything. He did everything. And here's a snippet from later. And let me say this. Has anybody ever heard the name Grover Cleveland Alexander? One of the most famous pitchers in the history of baseball from way, way back in the day. Right up there with Christy Mathewson as like the greatest pitchers in early baseball, along with Cy Young and Walter Johnson. Okay. But he was a Cub. And I want you to hear this story. Keep in mind, by the way, do any of you remember the amusement park Riverview that was once at Belmont and Western, Roscoe and Western? Some of our older listeners might, but it was Riverview, and it was right there, and it was there a long time. Here's how long. Here's from Bill Veeck's book. With a father who ran a ball club, my boyhood was the kind most kids dream about. For hanging around the ballpark, I got to know all the players. During my early years, our great star was Grover Cleveland Alexander. Alex was always extraordinarily kind to me. In one of the golden moments of my boyhood, Alex took me to Riverview, an amusement park in Chicago, and was challenged at the baseball throwing concession. In those days, you didn't just throw baseballs at a pyramid of pins. They'd have a cage with a guy sitting on a collapsible platform. The customer would throw the baseball at a round metal disc, and if he hit the disc, the platform would spin up and dump the guy into a tank of water. To make it even more delightful, if you dumped him, you didn't have to pay. The guy on the platform was also the shill. It was his job to insult the people as they walked by and keep them so riled up that they'd keep throwing just for the pleasure of dunking him in the water. As Grover Cleveland Alexander and I were strolling past, the guy on the platform yelled, "Hey, you bum, you don't look as if you could hit the side of a barn. You don't frighten me, you bum. Come on, step up and let me see what you can do." Well, here I am with the man who could control a baseball better than anybody else in the world, even if he did look like a bum. "Come on, Alex," I said. "Let's show him something." Grover Cleveland Alexander could have hit that disc all night. He almost drowned three different guys. They'd slide off the platform, hit the tank, climb out, and before they were halfway back onto the platform, splash, back into the water again. Dude is walking with Grover Cleveland Alexander at an amusement park, and the guy in the dunk tank challenges the greatest pitcher alive to throw baseballs at a metal disc. I mean, I just love that stuff.
There you go, you bum.
Reuben Ford Spiegel once dunked somebody
in a dunk tank with a pitch, didn't you, Rue? I forget who you dunked, but you nailed that. Do you remember who it was? I don't remember who it was. I remember that John Vincent, the anthem singer, was egging you on. Was that who you dunked?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember if it was him in the tank or not, but you nailed that, just like Grover Cleveland Alexander. Anyway, read Vec is in Rec if you want to learn about the Cubs and the White Sox and incredible baseball stories for miles and miles and miles. And go watch the Saint of Second Chances on Netflix about Mike Vec, who I really, really want to own the White Sox again someday. Phone lines are open. You want to talk about anything regarding the White Sox, we can do it this hour. And anything regarding the Cubs, we can also do this hour. But interested in how the White Sox fans feel, if you want to talk about your broadcast, you can. You want to talk about Bill Vec, you can. If you want to talk about 9 shutouts already, you can do that. Phone line's open. Jack is in Wilmette on 670 The Score. Jack, good morning and welcome in. How are you?
Please, how you doing?
I'm great.
I got a, correct counsel.
Yes, sir.
He's with the Brewers. He's got 4 guys that go 7 innings. 1 guy that gets a hater. He became a genius. He comes here. He lets Hendricks give up 7 runs 4 times in a row. That means he blew at least 4 games for the Cubs. Then he has a closer who, after 3 times blowing it, he brings him in 2 more times, and then in the 8th inning the other day, he's responsible for 6 or 7 losses. And he was so smart with the Brewers because he had that kind of a pitching staff. Now he's just a regular manager, and nobody in town is saying anything negative about him. This is almost like Justin Fields. It's everybody else's fault, not his. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Jack. Interesting. Look, all managers deserve criticism and critique. They do. It's the very nature of the game, and there are things that can often go wrong. I've been critical. I think he needs to push the starters more. I wanted to see Jameson Taillon start the 7th yesterday. I know he's at 99 pitches. I wanted to see him start it. I wanted to see Javier Assad start the 6th the other day at Shea. And for the record, I felt these things and said these things wherever I was at the moment that it happened, because I'd already brought it up as a thing. He said, especially after Kyle Hendricks got hurt, that he wanted to push the starters more. Well, go ahead and do so. And I know it's hard when they're young. He did push Wesneski the other day. That's in part because he had no one. That blown save by Alzolay in the 8th, there was very, very few people available at that point. And I put that one on Adbert more than I put it on Craig. But some of the others, Keegan Thompson's blow up yesterday. It was Adbert again after Assad, wasn't it? Did Adbert give up the home run after Assad pitched at Shea? Trying to remember in that 6th inning after Assad pitched 5 innings at Shea and then left. I think it was Adbert. But anyway.
It was Adbert that followed him.
Yeah. So it's been Adbert a few times, and they need to arm him with more. No roster moves as of now that I've heard about, but they need to arm him with more. And yes, he needs to churn through some of the roles and push the starters further. I am absolutely willing to look at Craig, and we talk to him every couple of weeks on Parker and the Spiegel, and I'll bring the stuff up to him specifically. And he can take it. He's a grown-ass man. He'll probably have great answers. We'll do that, I think, Wednesday this week. But yeah, it's tricky, man. It is tricky, and it is a philosophy around MLB that needs to be pushed back on. And managers are the only ones who can really, really do it in the middle of a game, because they're the ones that are in charge. Callers, we're going to get to you. We have some Cubs news and a Cubs lineup as well. We'll get that to you in our next segment as we continue to take your calls. We'll also do Team of the Moment right here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score. I think what's clear for me in this stretch is that we're going to have to push our starting pitching a little farther in games. We've had some off days here. We've had some relievers with, you know, that I think we're in pretty good shape with the bullpen, but we've still, for the first 22 games, we've got some guys with 10 appearances, and that's a little on the high end for me. And so we're going to have to just, that means starters have to cover more innings. And I think we're equipped to do that and in a good spot to do that, but it's definitely going to be part of the next 2 weeks.
So that was Craig Counsell after Kyle Hendricks got hurt. And I use hurt with quotation marks, of course. But Kyle Hendricks has made one start at AA. Apparently he's going to make another. So he is not back just yet. All signs point to Justin Steele being ready to go on Monday against the San Diego Padres. Hell, that's tomorrow. That is good news. Kyle Hendricks is throwing a bullpen right here in Chicago today. So that's interesting that he's throwing a bullpen here and then could go back down to AA. Back down to West Tennessee. Interesting that he came back up. So maybe they want to let Tommy Hotovy and others with the big league club take a peek at Kyle right here on a side day. Also got this update. Cody Bellinger and Seiya Suzuki will run the bases and hit today. They will both run the bases and both hit today. Well, that is good news.
That's what we like.
I wonder what that means for impending roster moves whenever those guys are up. When Bellinger comes back, I don't know if I send PCA down. I don't think I do. The way he's been swinging the bat, you know what I really like about the way that PCA is swinging the bat? Yes, there's been strikeouts, and yesterday there was a bad one in the first when both he and Wisdom had a chance to really break that game wide open, and they both K'd. But at the series at Shea, there was contact when there needed to be for a ground out RBI that ended up being all they needed in the Shota game. And there was a sac fly RBI as well. I may be mixing up the game, but there were two times where contact was needed and he made it. Liked seeing that out of PCA, just as we liked seeing it out of Wisdom yesterday. So it'll be very interesting. God, I wish they trusted Patrick Wisdom more defensively at third base.
He was there a couple of years ago and really good, but it just hasn't quite gotten there since 22, right?
Yeah, because then you'd wonder if Nick Madrigal was the roster move to be made at that point.
I'm wondering what his role is, right, besides third base replacement.
He was there as a defensive replacement yesterday in a two-run game. He replaced Morrell after Morrell's at bat in the eighth inning. 670, the score is where you are. We'll do team of the moment in a minute, but the phone lines have lit back up. And I honor that. This is Kurt in Rockford on 670 The Score. Hello, Kurt.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Great.
Hey, yesterday must have been officially SSS Day in baseball.
Okay.
SSS Day stands for Same Score Saturday. Cubs finished 6-5, and the Sox finished 6-5.
Okay.
Both of them on the victory end. So, you know, hey. Yeah, let's have as many SSS days as we can.
Well, that's good stuff, Kurt. Thank you. Let me look and see how many 6-5 games we had around MLB. Got those two yesterday and then no others. So really what it is a small sample same score Saturday. So I would argue that it's really an SSSSS, Kurt. That's what I would argue. Stan is in Bellwood on the Score. Good morning, Stan.
Hey, good morning to you, Speaks. How's everything? You're sounding good today.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, no, I feel good. The associate producer is here. I got to read from Vec as in Rec on the Score's airwaves. Come on. Let's go.
I hear you. That's what I'm saying. Hey, Speaks, just to prove to John Schriffen that I'm not a hater, I would like to say one thing about the White Sox this year that I think Chris Getz has gotten right. I really believe that the bullpen has a chance to be really, really good. They've had moments this year where they've, you know, crapped the bed and, you know, gotten bombed out. But on balance, I think their arrow is pointed up, And most of those guys have a future. And it's one thing that the White Sox can build on. So
the problem is, Stan, as you know, is that bullpens are remarkably volatile from season to season. So bullpen as a calling card in terms of a build is tough to do overall, you know, from year to year. But I will agree that a bunch of arms look real good and real useful in that bullpen, including Jordan Leisure, who they grabbed from the Dodgers. I think Leisure's stuff and his moxie has been pretty good. And so there's some bright spots there for sure, but it's hard to think of it as a building block. Maybe it's a good sign of development. We'll take that.
I'm going to push back. I think you can build. I know this. You're not going to win without a good one. So, you know, and right now, that's the best group that this current team has. They're young. I don't see why, you know, this can't be a building block. Maybe I'm wrong. We'll find out. But I do know I like what I see, and I want to see more. But Speaks on the national level, before I go,
yeah,
I got a question for you. And it's just I don't know why it bugs me, because I really don't care about the Miami Marlins. But this trade of Luis Urias the other day,
yeah,
is the looks like it's the forerunner for another fire sale upcoming by the Marlins, which would be the fourth or fifth that they've had in my memory, you know, over the last couple of decades. What exactly is the business that they're in? What is the point of their existence? Just 2 years ago, they were in it down to the wire,
yeah,
you know, for the playoff. And now all of a sudden, they're blowing it up again. What are they doing down there, and why can't they get it right?
Look, Stan, that's all on point. Rather than give you chapter and verse on the specificity of the Miami Marlins predicament, because A, I can't speak on it with full authority, and B, we're in Chicago, I will take the opportunity to point out what has long been a problem with the competitive balance in this sport and in this league. And every time there is a work stoppage, there is part of me that wants it to be so vicious and so severe that they get to a salary cap and a salary floor. Because without a salary floor, you are perpetually looking at certain franchises who don't do it as well as the Tampa Bay Rays, and they end up trying, failing, selling. Trying, failing, selling. Or you look at franchises who exist, you know, 60 to 70 to 80 mil below an average payroll, like the Detroit Tigers, and seem to have an interesting young core, but it's hard to imagine them ever getting over the top. Now, I know there are exceptions, and the Diamondbacks went to the World Series last year, and they've gone ahead and added some off to a slow start, but maybe they'll get back. And the aforementioned Tampa Rays are a brilliant, efficient franchise. But there are so many franchises around baseball that, for reasons ranging from bad ownership to bad development to unwillingness, just have absolutely no shot and create an outsized and kind of gross imbalance. And it's not going to change unless there's a salary cap and a salary floor. So sometimes when there's an ugly work stoppage, as there probably will be again in a couple of years, I find myself hoping it's violent enough that it changes the whole damn thing. This is Phil in Chicago on The Score. Hey, Phil, how are you?
How are you doing? Thank you. I'm in McHenry, by the way.
Ah, McHenry. Phil in McHenry. I know you, Phil. Thanks for calling. What's happening?
Hey, no problem. Hey, love you, Steve. Hey, listen, I love the show, by the way, and I'm a big Cub fan, and I'm going to tell you something. There's a lot of things you've been thinking about, and there's a lot of things I'd love to talk to you about, but we got enough time to talk about it. But you know, my biggest problem is, and I agree with that caller that you had a couple, I think one or three callers away.
Yep.
He called up Cliff Council. I have a lot of respect for that man, but I've seen him literally lose probably half a dozen games under his control. While we've been in this, while the Cubs have lost, you know, Bellinger and Suzuki and Steele's been out. Now, one thing I will say is that things are going to get better. I think things are going to get much better once we get Steele back. And I heard Bellinger and Suzuki are replaying, I think, this next week, actually.
Yes, Bellinger and Suzuki are both going to run the bases and hit at Wrigley Field today. That's a great bit of news. Thank you for the call, Phil. Let me be clear on Craig Counsell. My main gripe has developed, and it is him not pushing the starters longer, okay? And fair game on that. Some of the bullpen choices, I think, have been odd. Sometimes it's been guys who have to be good really sucking. And sometimes it's been limited options based on what he's been provided. And what has happened in terms of the rest and such like that. So not everything is on him, but some is on him, and this is baseball. I will say, I think he's responsible for a bunch of wins as well. Like, I really do. I pointed out one specifically early on where he used Ben Brown with an opener. Remember, he used Luke Little as the opener, and then Brown came in for his first extended run, and we'll talk to Ben Brown about this in about an hour. His first appearance, Ben Brown, was in Texas, and it was in relief, and he was okay, and then he had a really bad inning. But then his next appearance was as an opener on the road, and it was perfectly executed and led to a win. And I was like, you know what? That's a manager win. Put it there. I think there have been others that we can point to in terms of utilizing guys in the right spot and people, you know, performing very, very well. So it's a mixed bag of wins and losses, and even those are hard to document. So anyway, it's good and healthy conversation, but understand the moderation, in my opinion, on Craig Counsell. One more quickie. This is Gator Dale on the Score. Hello, Gator. You're on with me, Matt Spiegel. What's up?
Hey, Matt, just think, if Alzolay didn't blow six saves, the Cubs would be the best record in the entire MLB right now.
Yeah. Well, and in that regard, if they had gone out and gotten a legit closer and Adbert had been in a different role, you know, you drop Adbert down, you drop Neris down, then there's that too. So you can point that at Jed. But yeah, Adbert has been rough. And I like Adbert very much, but he has been rough. Remember we had him on, Sean, a couple of weeks ago, and I said, what's going on? Why is the swing and miss not there? And he said, honestly, it's just been a little cold. And I don't think that's enough of the reason. I think it's spots. Because even when he just gave up the three little singles and not the bombs the other day, he missed spots left and right, man.
No one's chasing that slider either.
No.
He's continuously getting ahead of batters and not getting that out. It's what Keegan Thompson ran into last year.
Yeah. If they're not chasing that, then they'll sit fastball.
Fastball's really, really straight.
Yeah,
so.
And Adbert's can be that way as well. My biggest problem with Adbert the other day is letting three guys steal a base. Letting three dudes steal bases. And that's when you're bringing it out to the other aspects of your game. We will come back and give you our team of the moment around MLB. And they are close. And they are good. At least for now. We'll do that next. Ben Brown in an hour. James Fegan before we're out of here. Two more hours of Hit and Run on the Score.
Last time the Twins won 12 straight games, he wasn't alive. Right side, Santana. Has it, and it's over. The Minnesota Twins, for the first time since 1991, have won 12 consecutive baseball games.
12.
It was the team of the moment.
That's why the Twins are. The Twins are the
team of the moment. They caught our eyes.
The Minnesota Twins are the team of the moment. They were 7-13 on the 21st of April. And now they have won 12 in a row. And here's why. Oh, no, we got to lose the karaoke track because it just says Heat now. Sean, I got to sing Team of the Moment again over that back part, just in case you do that. What the hell, man?
Hey, man, I only put the audio in from Russ Patera. I don't listen to it always. I trust him. Not anymore, Russ.
Man,
Dude, you're throwing that guy under the bus?
No.
He's the best there is.
It's my fault, Rust. Yeah. If you hear this, don't ever.
Clearly, I'm pointing a thumb. It's my fault for not singing Team Over the Moment over the heat of the moment on that part of the karaoke track from Asia.
Has anyone ever told you got a great voice, man?
No. They have not. But anyway, Team of the Moment is Minnesota Twins. Anyway, they were the worst in baseball at hitting off-speed pitches. They were hitting 195 as a team at 7-13 overall, and they were terrible at hitting off-speed and breaking pitches. And since then, they are seeing even more, because everybody knew that the word was out that they couldn't hit off-speed pitches, except the White Sox, who threw them 60% plus fastballs. And they have been great. They are now absolutely dominating against off-speed pitches. They're seeing even more, and they're dominating, and they've scored five or more runs in all but two games of this streak. Rocco Baldelli says they've just been putting the ball in play, trying to put a good swing on it, that is a productive thing to do, instead of trying to blast against stuff like that. And that's not what's happening anymore. So, and the pitching, the bullpen has been incredible. They got a bunch of dudes in the bullpen who can save games. In fact, in this streak, they have gotten saves from Caleb Thielbar, from Griffin Jacks. They've gotten saves from Cole Sands and from a guy with some of the nastiest stuff in all of baseball, Joan Duran. And he's been great. This is what it sounds like when Joan Duran enters a game at Target Field.
Atención, chimoso. El que quiera perder su tiempo, que me aconseje. Que estoy en robo, pero feo.
All the lights go out.
Y hoy hay que darme banda.
Help me describe the visuals, Sean. It gets crazy. All the lights go out.
They're flashing the lights. Flames are across the board.
Uh-huh.
Highlights of him playing. And everyone in the stands has their phones out flashing them.
Oh, man.
So cool.
So cool. One of the best closer entrances in baseball is Minnesota. And this is the other reason that things are going well, is that their vibes are elite. Elite. And yes, I'm the good vibes guy. And I like good vibes. It's my favorite T-shirt. I'm not wearing it right now. Right now, I'm wearing Ruben's favorite T-shirt, as a matter of fact. But anyway, I'll ask you about that in a second, Ru. But the vibes are so good, in part because of the summer sausage. Is everybody hip to the summer sausage? They ended up with a summer sausage that they now are throwing around as a celebration sausage after home runs, but also after big offensive moments of any kind and after the game. And Rocco Baldelli expressed some fear about what was going to happen to the person who was with the sausage when the package opened, that it was going to be bad and he was going to catch a disease. But then Dan Hayes, our friend over at The Athletic who covers the Twins, did some of the finest bit of sausage journalism that I've ever seen this week, where he talked to a lot of sausage experts and got confirmation that the sausage is already cooked and will still be edible if at any time it opens up. So I'm not sure if they've gotten other sausages involved now, if they've added to the depth chart of their sausages. They should. That would be advisable, frankly, just to have it, you know, as a backup. But the sausage and the Twins has just all been a mix of incredibly good vibes. And they've now won 12 games in a row. And all of a sudden, that division has four teams over 500. And the Twins, who were my pick to win the division, are sitting there in second behind the Cleveland Guardians, who have been a Team of the Moment previously, people, and ahead of the Kansas City Royals, who could be a Team of the Moment in the future. Ruben, I think this is still your favorite T-shirt of mine. Is that true? You can describe the T-shirt for the peoples, if you will. Is this still your favorite?
Which one is it? Yes.
Tell people what it says.
Well, basically, everyone, it says... That's a horrible idea. What time?
Exactly. And the youngster likes it because it's dad saying that's a horrible idea. I'm not going to do that. All right, but what time? Let's get together. Let's hang out. Let's do that. And I don't try to live by that ethos. There was a time, I think, when I did. But the kid likes the shirt. Anyway, keep screening calls. He's got homework to do. Sean, he has homework to do at some point. You can send him away with the Chromebook to do some homework.
Sure. He's been doing a little bit of both. He's multitasking over here.
Oh, really?
Kids special over here, man.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just kids today. They can handle a lot of different screens.
It's terrifying.
It's freaking horrifying.
I'm 31 and I'm scared of it, man.
Hey, man, I believe the children are our future. Okay? So, anyway.
Did you want to sing that? Or?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I liked it better when Sexual Chocolate sang it with Eddie Murphy. That's my favorite version of The Greatest Love of All. You are listening to Hit and Run on 670 The Score. We have bonus Hit and Run today up until 12:45. Here's what's coming up on the show. James Fegan in the noon hour talking White Sox. He's my favorite guy to talk White Sox with. And no offense to Ryan McGuffey or to Steve Stone. I apologize to all of them. But Fegan grew up a White Sox fan. Maybe McGuffey did too. I don't know. Now I feel bad. Whatever. I love you, Guff. You know that. But anyway, James Fegan coming up in 1 hour. Before that, Ben Brown, when he is done with his bullpen session at Wrigley, he is going to join us on The Score. Very much looking forward to that. Coming up next, we always like to look at the leaderboards, pretending we are your old school Sunday morning newspaper, and two very specific items we will look at next on 670 The Score.
It's a substantial packaged, sausage.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.